I read the first line. Mother, I cannot believe I am writing you this letter, but I have decided to take my life. At that point, I screamed. Oh my God, he's going to kill himself. I didn't read on. All I knew is I had to get to the telephone. I had to call him. I had to call the police to say stop. Because when Jeffrey Peck said he was going to do something, he did it.
I'm Dan Rodericks of the Baltimore Sun. This is Roughly Speaking. Jeffrey Peck's mother, Dolores Peck, remembers him reading the ingredients on cereal boxes when he was 2 years old. Before Jeffrey was old enough for elementary school, psychologists labeled him profoundly gifted or academically precocious. He finished high school at 11, graduated from Towson University at 15. The Sun published a feature story about him in 1998 after he had started college. I don't feel like I'm different from the other students, he told reporter Howard Libet. I just feel like I'm a 20-year-old trapped inside an 11-year-old body. Jeffrey Peck was a special young man with great promise. And after college and a couple of years of med school in West Virginia, he came home to Harford County in Maryland. He had a job, friends, and a girlfriend, and showed no outward signs of distress. But he died at 24 by suicide. And his parents, devastated by his death, became determined to find out why Jeffrey had taken his own life. Dolores Peck has written a book about her gifted son's life and about what she came to learn about his death. The story begins when Dolores Peck and her husband adopt Jeffrey, a fact that they decided to keep a secret. Were you ever tempted to tell Jeffrey he was adopted?
I thought about it, and I thought that one day, if my husband died before me, I would definitely tell Jeff because he had the right to know.
But was your husband's wish that he didn't know?
My husband felt that the moment that the hospital staff put our precious infant in our arms, he was our son, and it didn't matter about where he came from. He was meant to be ours. He was a gift.
When did you know that Jeffrey was special, that he had special gifts?
Not until he was professionally tested by the testing psychologist.
How old was he then?
He was 3 years, 10 months old.
What'd they tell you?
We were really pushed to have him tested by a friend. She had been the editor of a Mensa newsletter about children, and she said, if you don't have him tested to see where he is, you're going to have big problems with him in school. It's really necessary to have him tested. So we decided we better go for it because we needed whatever would be best for our child. So we made an appointment with the testing psychologist, and we were told that it would take about an hour. And I asked her, how do we prepare? How do we prepare, Jeff? And she said, no preparation is necessary. Just bring him in and tell him we're going to play some games. So we did that. 20 minutes passed, and she opened the door. And I thought, oh my gosh, what's wrong? And she said, Mrs. Peck, I have to talk to you. We have a problem here. A problem? I'm so sorry, Dr. Anderson. I'm so sorry. We were pushed. We just brought him here because someone said they felt that he was gifted. And how much do we owe you? I'll write you out a check right away. Quite the contrary. Come in. I need to talk to you. So she sat us down, and she drew the bell curve. And she said, actually, I cannot get a measurement on him. He is beyond a 200 IQ. Okay, that sounds good. I have a smart kid.
Yeah.
She said, I will give you a complete report. Oh, how nice. Jeffrey's smart. He's a good kid. This is wonderful. And then we got the report, and we followed what she said to do with his education and extracurricular activities. But it was not easy.
When I asked you when you knew that he was special, you said it wasn't until he was professionally tested. But didn't you have some sense that your son was special before that?
I was a 44-year-old mother when he was born. I didn't know about babies. I didn't know about kids.
You didn't have any perspective.
No, I just thought he was normal.
You didn't have a way of comparing him to anyone else.
No, because he was talking in full sentences at the age of 6 months. And I thought, well, I give him attention. I love him. I'm with him every day. And then he was reading at the age of 2. And I thought, that's nice. And I just thought everything he did was normal. And I just, you know, everyone feels that their kids are special. But to me, he was just Jeff. This was normal for Jeff.
What was the recommendation for his education?
The testing psychologist said that he should be advanced 1 year when he goes to school, and that he should take a foreign language and a musical instrument. So we tried that. He enjoyed the foreign language. We did Japanese. We had a Japanese tutor for him. He absolutely loved that. And then we had a French tutor for him. And he loved the piano. He loved music. He really loved music.
The first story I read about him that appeared in the Baltimore Sun, I have it here. I printed it out. It was from 1992. He was 5.5 years old, and he was considered academically precocious, or as many educators prefer to say, gifted and talented. And he was in a special program at the time. That's why we did the story.
Yes, that was at Towson University. It was a summer program called College for Kids, and he absolutely loved it there.
And then there was another story. We catch up with Jeffrey later in the Baltimore Sun. It's kind of interesting to look to see what my newspaper reported about him. He's 11 years old, and he's in Biology 101 at Dundalk Community College.
Yes.
So tell us about all that. How did that come to be? I know you say in your book that you took him home, right? You homeschooled him.
He was in a private day school, and it was a little four-year-old program.
Right.
And he just didn't fit in the program because he could read and he didn't want to go pasting Cheerio letters on a piece of 8.5 by 11 paper. So there seemed to be problems. So then we talked to them about possibly moving him ahead a year. Jeff and I both sat in the same 5-year-old classroom one day, and the kids were all circled around for circle time, and we heard and saw what went on, and Jeff said, "Mom, take me out of here. There's nothing for me to learn here. Take me home." So from that time on, we became a homeschool situation.
What was that like? This is something you'd never been through before.
Right. I was scared to death. What do you do? I'm not a teacher. I have a smart kid. What do you do? So we investigated, and we decided to use the Calvert program, which is an excellent program. They had the Calvert School in Baltimore, so that's what we followed. And basically, Jeff just taught himself.
By the time he was 11, he had graduated from high school.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
What were you and your husband thinking in terms of his future and what was going to happen next?
We never knew what would happen next with Jeff. We just knew that somehow the right door would open.
And what were you thinking? Like when he was 12, did you have some idea about how your son would end up? Did you see him in a lab coat with a stethoscope? Did you see him as an architect? Did you have a vision of your son as an adult?
I knew he would be a scientist. He loved biology. It was just in his blood, his blood.
So he was going to pursue biology.
Yes, yes. He thought that he loved the water and he was like a fish, that he loved to swim, and he wanted to be, a marine biologist.
And this decision to go to Dundalk Community College for classes, how did that come about?
Well, we were taking music lessons. He was taking music lessons for the piano. And the teacher that we had, he also taught at the community college. We went to his house, though, for the lessons. And sometimes he would have us come to the college because it was easier for him that particular day. So one day after Jeff's piano lesson, he came out and he said, I think you ought to think about Jeff enrolling in courses here, because he could get college credit for his piano, and he's very bright, and I think it would be a perfect environment for him.
And did Jeffrey thrive in all of this? We haven't really described what he was like through all of this. Okay. Describe him for us a little bit.
Very outgoing. He was a people person. He could have been a politician. He honestly could have been. He loved people. He wanted to help people. He never made anyone feel that he was smarter than they are. He felt comfortable with everyone. He was just full of life and full of energy.
He wasn't shy.
Wasn't shy. He was animated. He was really an animated individual.
So how did he do at Dundalk? What would you say about him, not just in terms of education and achievement, but socially with the others, the older people?
Excellent. He loved it. He got to be friends with the students. He tutored the students. He walked all over the campus himself. He just enjoyed being part of the community.
So that must have been a little odd, though, for you. You drove him there every day.
Yes.
And he's like 5 feet tall.
Right.
And he's 11 years old.
Right.
With people who are taking courses after high school. Did he make friends there?
He did. In fact, he still has a few of those friends on his Facebook that is still in existence.
Under the headline, A College Scholar at 11, the Sun's May 13, 1998 story on Jeffrey Peck began, the 11-year-old sitting in Biology 101 at Dundalk Community College looks more like someone's kid brother than a student in the class, until he starts conducting a complicated experiment with sugar molecules and bacteria. He also works comfortably with lab partners three times his age, earns straight A's in an array of subjects, and was nominated for president of the student government. He's even starting a Japanese animation club to expose other students to his passion. With a self-assuredness that belies his age, Jeff Peck has taken the college by storm.
He absolutely loved his first biology professor at Dundalk Community College. That just opened the door.
Where did he go from there?
He went to Towson University. He was offered a full scholarship, a presidential scholarship. We were so proud of him.
And so he's at Towson at 12, 13?
Yes.
14?
And he graduated 1 week after his 15th birthday.
Right. And then where does the Jeffrey Peck story go from there?
From there, he wanted to go to graduate schools. And for some reason, the doors just were not opening. He did get one interview at Wake Forest University, but they didn't offer him a spot there. So it was, what do you do with this 15-year-old college graduate who graduated with honors? What's next? Why aren't the doors opening?
Were you given a reason why the colleges weren't interested in him as a graduate student? Did they think he was just too young?
I don't honestly know. They never said, and he applied with many letters. You know, you have to send all these letters to apply for a position, but they never really said. They never really said.
So he must have been disappointed at that.
He was disappointed. He was offered graduate school at the University of Maryland, College Park, but the stipulation was he had to live on campus. And I felt that he was just not ready to live on campus. The chair of the science department offered that he could live with him and his wife at his home while he would be studying at University of Maryland, College Park. But we just couldn't let him go. Forgive me. He was just too precious. He was their only child, and I just didn't feel comfortable with it. It was overwhelming to me.
And he was 15.
Yes, yes.
So what did Jeffrey do at 15 and 16?
Okay, at 15, he ended up working under Dr. Kirk Sivan at Johns Hopkins Medical Campus, working with stem cells in the pediatric oncology department.
Did he like that?
He liked it, but it wasn't truly enough for him. He was always searching for something else, and then he moved on to many other labs at Johns Hopkins, which was a good opportunity for him because he kept moving on.
Yes. Worked in different departments.
Yes, yes, he did.
Was he looking for his niche?
I think so. I think so. I mean, he worked in neuropathology, urology, and GI,
right,
oncology, but he just wasn't fulfilled. He loved everyone he worked with. He truly did, and that was a good thing. And he knew all the people in IT, and he helped fix the computers when the IT person was on vacation, and he enjoyed that.
So the photograph on the cover of your book, A Gifted Life Cut Short, The Jeffrey Peck Story, shows him in a lab coat at Johns Hopkins in pediatric oncology. So and this photograph is from when he was 15.
Yes, yes, it is.
And the photograph on the back of the book, it's an older Jeffrey Peck.
Yes.
How old is he there?
I would say he's about 24.
What happened to Jeffrey after that?
A lot. He was accepted into medical school at West Virginia School of Medicine, and he went there for a year and a half. And he did not like medical school. It was not working out for him. I think the main concern with medical school, which I didn't realize at first, is that a student needs to have a great deal of memorization. And Jeffrey did not learn that way. He was a concept learner, and that was a difficulty for him. They wanted him to take medicine like the other medical students were taking, attention deficit medicine, because it helps you concentrate more and helps you perform better. But we talked it over, and Jeff said, no, I do not want to take the medicine. I have to be me, and that's what the decision was.
Hmm. So the decision also included leaving school.
Leaving school.
He came back to Baltimore. He came back to Maryland.
Correct. He came back to Maryland and went back to Johns Hopkins again, which was a very comfortable place to be.
So he kept working.
Yes, he kept working.
He did find jobs. He just didn't find the right graduate studies.
Correct.
Was there an expectation that the trajectory of Jeffrey's life, he'd be Doogie Howser? You know, he'd be 21 years old and a doctor already. Was there an expectation that that would happen?
I think everyone at Hopkins referred to him as Doogie Howser, and he hated it.
I bet.
Absolutely hated it. In fact, the photo that I have on the front of the book was a photo that when he was alive, he absolutely hated that photo. He said, Mother, hide that. I just don't like the way I look on there. I just don't like it. I felt that if you become a medical doctor, you're going to be set for life, and that he could help others, and with his knowledge and science and everything behind him, that maybe one day he would make a discovery. He would help people with Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease or cancer, and I felt that that's where he was going. I really felt
that. You believed he had a contribution to make?
Without a doubt, and I just feel in my heart to this day, his potential was never fully realized because his gifted life was cut short.
That's the title of Dolores Peck's book, A Gifted Life Cut Short. As Jeffrey reached his 20s, he found a job at a medical technology company in Hunt Valley, and he worked on a test for the human papillomavirus. As you'll hear, he had friends and a girlfriend. But in January 2011, he drove to the stone ruins of the old Sparks Elementary School in Baltimore County, not far from where he worked, and killed himself with carbon monoxide. His shocked and grieving parents wanted to know why, so they set out to find out. And after gaining access to their son's cell phone records, concluded that Jeffrey had been subjected to months of cyberbullying. And the bully, Dolores Peck believes, was a woman who claimed Jeffrey had made her pregnant. How old was Jeffrey when he died?
He was 24 years old.
What happened in those years up until that time? And I must say, the details in your book about how all this unraveled and how you found out that Jeffrey had died is very gripping, and it's well written, and it's so tragic. But I think our listeners would like to know what happened in those years.
Well, he had fun with his friends in the evening, and most of his friends at that time were about his age, and they had all graduated from high school and had gone into college but were local. He enjoyed going to parties with his friends, although he wasn't a big party person. He found a different position at Becton Dickinson in Hunt Valley, and that is where he truly belonged.
Now, what did he do there?
He was in science. I'm saying science, forgive me.
Research and development, I think it's called.
Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. He loved it. He had a lot of team members. As time went on, his name is on a patent for HPV, which is quite an accomplishment.
He kept a day job. He worked in a field that he liked.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he had a social life. He had friends.
Girlfriends, too. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's what brings us to the path of the story. It's hard to describe. Sometimes I feel like you're so angry in the book. Other times you're trying to understand and you seem confused about what happened to your son. So what do you think happened to your son?
I think he was definitely a victim. It all occurred in 6 weeks with 60,000 text messages, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He just couldn't see what the normal person would see.
This stemmed from a relationship with a woman.
Well, I don't truly believe it's a relationship. It happened one night when he was out, and he really didn't even know the woman.
This woman got into Jeffrey's life and, what, stalked him, harassed him, bullied him?
For 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 6 weeks, she kept threatening him that she was pregnant by him, mm-hmm. and they were going to have a baby, and she needed him to stand by her, and she needed him to do things for her. She needed things for him to do.
And Jeffrey had a relationship with a woman
yes.
already, right?
Yes, yes.
The book opens with the last email he sent you. And in it, he says he's going to take his own life. He feels very guilty, it seems like. He did something wrong. He had a relationship with another woman. And this is the woman who continued to harass him over all that period. That's what you're saying.
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
He felt he was so, I want to say waterboarded, if that's the word to use.
Tortured,
that I believe she made him feel that it actually did happen, and he just couldn't think any longer. And because he had idealism and perfectionism, and he had deep worries, and he didn't want to worry us, he believed her. He didn't really believe that someone would lie and say you were pregnant with a child if it wasn't true. How could you do this to someone? And the fact was, she was never pregnant at all. She was never, ever pregnant at all.
And how do you know that?
Because I found out. I was a mother on a mission after he died. I had to find out the truth.
Because when Jeffrey died, when he committed suicide, you didn't know any of this.
Correct.
But he kept it all from you.
Correct. He kept it from his girlfriend.
There are some cryptic references to having done something wrong in that last email that he sent you. That sent you into a panic because you didn't know where Jeffrey was. But you didn't know the details.
No, I read the first line. Mother, I cannot believe I am writing you this letter, but I have decided to take my life. At that point, I screamed. Oh my God, he's going to kill himself. I didn't read on. All I knew is I had to get to the telephone. I had to call him. I had to call the police to say stop. Because when Jeffrey Peck said he was going to do something, he did it.
Is there anything else that would suggest him for suicide before that?
Nothing.
Did you ever see him depressed, morose, out of contact? Quiet, lethargic, anything like that?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He was well adjusted. Never depressed, never on drugs, never talked about being suicidal. Hmm. We've never had suicide in our family. Even afterwards, I contacted his biological family. No suicide. No suicide. And I even contacted every college, every doctor report that I could get to see if there was anything in there that he was ever suicidal. Complete clean background. And I'm saying clean background, but I think you all know what I mean.
Right. So there's nothing there other than this crushing feeling of what? Guilt, harassment, feeling trapped?
Yes, I think he felt absolutely trapped. He couldn't think any longer. And later I found out that he had lost weight, a lot of weight, but he lived at home and I saw him every evening and I didn't notice that. And of course that made me feel guilty that I should have noticed. I should have.
You quote a psychologist in the book about how good the gifted and talented are at hiding their pain. Dr. James T. Webb shared that many gifted individuals have died by suicide, and the number is increasing. Gifted children and young adults, with their idealism and perfectionism, are often able to hide their deepest worries from us. I remember from the past reading that this trait is also known as masking. The psychologist is aware of other gifted student suicides where that was the case, where the parents had no idea the child was that troubled.
After he died, his car was taken to an impound lot. So when it came home that evening, we went out to the car and we were able to retrieve his iPhone. And the iPhone that started most of the problem with the cyberbullying was the key to unlocking what actually happened.
The woman who you say harassed him, bullied him, stayed on him through thousands of text messages about her situation, claiming she was pregnant. Why would she do that?
Well, again, the mother on the mission investigated, and I found out that she needed money. And I think she was just looking for an easy out and someone to get money from. I'm not a psychiatrist, but what she did was scary. Opening up the vials of formic and sulfuric acid and she could have called the police, and she didn't, even though she kept saying she was going to.
She could have called the police to report what?
That he was killing himself, yeah. And to go there to help him, to stop him.
She knew this from the text messages.
Yeah, she was texting him while he was doing it.
Did the text messages reveal that she was looking for money?
She didn't say money. She said, I need you to do some stuff for me, or I will let your family know, I will let your girlfriend know, I will let your work know.
As far as you know, she never did any of those things. She never contacted you or Jeffrey's girlfriend.
Correct.
So why did you write the book?
I wrote it because when Jeffrey was growing up, I always said to him, one day I'm going to write a book about you. And Jeff would say, oh, Mom, you never will. Yes, Jeff, I wrote that book. I fulfilled my promise. But the book doesn't have the ending that I thought it would.
It's not the story you thought you would write.
Correct.
The book you imagined was about this academically precocious, gifted and talented young man who had a great future in front of him somewhere, doing something extraordinary, right?
Yes, to save mankind, to help, to help, to help. And who would have ever thought that it would have ended the way it did? Jeff, he had an IQ greater than Einstein and even Stephen Hawking's. But it's not your number of an IQ, it's your potential and what you do with it. And unfortunately, it was stopped.
Writing a memoir is difficult. You really got to open up, reveal your inner thoughts about things. Did you find it difficult, or did you find it, like people say, therapeutic or even cathartic to go through the writing of a memoir?
It was just, I had to do this. I had to do this. I had to let other people know so this wouldn't happen to their child. So I sat down every evening between midnight and 2 a.m. and I thought, I'm going to start the book. I promised him I would write it, and I need to follow through. So I thought, how do you do this? You're not a writer. You don't have a college education. You're not where your son was. So I thought, imagine someone coming up on your front porch while you're sitting on your swing and saying to you, tell me about your son. And that's how it started.
So you wrote it as a cautionary tale to others about harassment that can take place using modern technology?
Correct.
But it also seems to be a story about your son's, I don't know if the word is struggles, but when he was turned down for graduate school and didn't fit into graduate school, it was like this trajectory of his life was kind of slowed down a little bit. Right?
Yes, yes. And plus, I would say the first half of the book reflects back on how he was treated by teachers, how he was treated by the professors in college. I would have thought, as a mother, that, hey, wow, you have this smart kid, he's gifted, and he's going to college early, and every professor is going to say, I want to work with that kid. But it wasn't that way. He had some difficulties. I call it at times the sea of jealousy. But when he got a professor that was really brilliant, it worked, and it worked beautifully. He loved microbiology and immunology. The professor talked so fast, and he just loved her. He absolutely loved her.
Was that the one at Dundalk?
This was at Towson University.
At Towson. You mentioned the teacher at Dundalk, too, the biology.
The biology.
Yeah.
Dr. O'Neill, he was fantastic. He was also very animated, and his classes were really fast-paced, and Jeffrey loved that. The faster, the better. Because for Jeffrey, hard things were easy, and easy things to understand were hard. Hug your child, no matter whether they're little or big, young or old. Tell them, no matter what, no matter how horrible it may seem, even though they've confided you in the past, always come to you with their problems.
Do you still put your hand on his bedroom door?
I certainly do, each and every night. Jeff, if you need a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or you need chicken nuggets, just give me a call. I love you, Jeff. Good night.
Dolores Peck is a seamstress who lives with her husband in Harford County, Maryland. Her book is A Gifted Life Cut Short, The Jeffrey Peck Story. The book was edited by Clorinda Harris. That's my show for now. For my producers, Quinn Kelly and Steve Early in the Baltimore Sun Newsroom, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you again for our next show.